Welcome to Homegirl Nation. I'm your host, Bridget Truong. Coming-of-age movies hold a special place in our hearts. Every generation has at least one that defines it. For me, Clueless, Good Will Hunting, 10 Things I Hate About You, My Girl, just a few. Coming to theaters on February 2nd is a fresh take on the coming-of-age story, one that tackles the challenges of teenagehood and dives into less discussed health issues that can add a lot of confusion, anxiety, and insecurity. Fitting in invites us into the world of 16-year-old Lindy, brilliantly portrayed by Maddie Ziegler, who grapples with the universal struggle of fitting in, just like any teenager, while also navigating her identity after being diagnosed with MRKH syndrome, the congenital disorder affecting the female reproductive system that is estimated to occur in approximately 1 in 4,500 to 1 in 5,000 female births. Now, this powerful narrative is rooted in the real-life experiences of writer and director Molly McGlynn. I had the privilege of meeting Molly at the Toronto International Film Festival, where we chatted about her journey, the art of finding humor in life's uncomfortable truths, and more. Fitting in is not only funny and touching, but it's also deeply authentic and perfect for every girl out there to watch. Now, let's meet Molly. You know, in your first feature, Merry-Go-Round, we see this character, this girl who's a secret alcoholic, trying to make amends with her dying father. And then later we realize this is part of your story. And then now, again, we're seeing your second feature film where we're tackling with a very personal lived experience with MRKH syndrome, a disorder that I personally, to be honest, did not know about before. So I want to kick things off by really asking you point blank, who taught you to give yourself permission to own your truth this loudly and proudly? Because for a lot of us women growing up, this is territory that we'd be so terrified to even voice, let alone really own and accept.
Yeah, it's nice to hear that you perceive me that way. And it's a struggle, you know, it feels very vulnerable for sure. And like when I think about who I was at 16, I mean, I was painfully shy growing up and insecure. And I don't know where the confidence came from. I have dealt with a lot of loss and grief in my life. And there comes a point where you can lose so much that it frees you to just be bold, because some of the worst things that I could imagine have happened in my own life, and I have survived those. So I certainly can survive making a film.
What do you think you would have lost if you didn't tell this story?
If I didn't tell this story, I think that I would lose the opportunity to make a film that I think some people need to see, and that some people might feel a little better about who they are. And there hasn't been a film about MRKH syndrome. And it feels kind of scary to take it on. But at the same time, this film is my perspective with it. And it certainly is not everyone's. You know, I think there is a film that a person of color could make about this condition and their experience in the medical world. And that's going to be completely different and something that I didn't experience. So this is just one person's story. And I hope it can open the doors for other people to tell theirs.
Let's start with just what is this syndrome, MRKH?
Yeah.
What does it stand for and what is it?
MRKH syndrome stands for, I think, Meyer-Rokitansky-Kuster-Hauser syndrome, named after four male doctors who discovered it. Medical terminology is often the doctors name it after themselves very often. Doctors historically have been men. Fun fact, I learned that the G-spot was named after the doctor. It was like Dr. G or something. Like it, you know, it's just so funny that these parts of the female body have been associated with male doctors. The condition is not as rare as you would think. It's about 1 in 4,000 to 1 in 5,000 births, which I've heard someone say that that's as common as being born naturally with red hair. So It's not that unusual, and it affects your reproductive system. So I am not a doctor, I will just say, but in utero, there's a key time period. I think it's 6 weeks where, you know, sort of certain parts are developed. Like everything at the embryonic stage is the same. And then, you know, parts start to evolve. And in this condition, it's like a little genetic blip where there's just some mixed messaging. And it means that I'm born without a uterus, cervix, and a shortened vaginal canal. So in order to have penetrative sex, you, with this condition, need some sort of, you know, medical treatment, whether that be manual devices or surgery or nothing at all. You know, maybe someone doesn't want to do that, and that's fine too.
In the film, the main character, Lindy, you see her getting this news from the male doctor, and her medical experience are with male doctors. Mm-hmm. And it's just watching it from my lens was painful. Mm-hmm. It was painful that she was offered this buffet of dildos at 16 years old to, like, here, That's how I saw it. Hey, figure it out. Here it is. And then the most uncomfortable scene, in my opinion, to watch was when she was on the table and the doctor asked if it was okay for the other student doctors to come in and look at, see what was going on and learn about RKH with her on the table. And I just thought, oh, if that was Molly's experience, I don't know how she went through that and how she got through that.
Yeah, it was. And I was, you know, made to feel like a specimen, and it's incredibly dehumanizing. I did a panel right before this with a reproductive expert called Dr. Greta Bauer. And in the Q&A, she said something so great. She said, from a medical perspective, consent is something that needs to constantly be navigated and it can be revoked. So in the scene that you're referring to with Lindy, at first she agrees, and then she sees them enter the room and she changes her mind, and he either doesn't hear her or ignores her and continues on. But I just love that she said that, like, consent can change at any time, and that applies to medical spaces and, you know, private spaces, sexual relationships. Even, you know, one day maybe something's okay and the next day it's not.
Did you find yourself kind of reliving the experience, the trauma that you did through the telling of this story? And were there moments that surprised you where you didn't know about the MRKH world or about yourself or your journey that really took you off guard?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely, it felt, you know, I was in director mode during the shoot. I'm just trying to make my day, et cetera. And then, you know, there's certain moments watching Maddie, for instance, in the scene you were talking about, and just her performance and emotion to this day, every time I see that, she does it so well that my stomach turns. And I know it's not real. It's acting. But just because I love her so much, just even imagining her feeling that way just makes me feel so uncomfortable. But it's also incredibly liberating. I feel like this condition robbed me of a lot of things, and I have felt so empowered taking back what I lost through making this film.
Do you remember that day that you were diagnosed, that day that you heard those letters, that diagnosis for the first time? How did you feel?
Yeah, it's funny. Like, when you write a script, you have to think about time period and, you know, are we talking about 1 month, 6 months, a year? And I didn't remember large parts of my life, which is like a common trauma response. So I was like, you know, it could have been, it's like, was this 3 weeks or was it a year? So I really had to kind of tap into some things that I'd repressed, and also do research really on timelines, how long it takes someone to dilate usually. So yeah, it was just a very surreal experience.
The casting, I mean, you mentioned Maddie, she's extraordinary in it. Emily is Rita, as your mom, so great. And you can't fake chemistry. You just watch of them from the get-go. You're like, this is it. And then everyone else supporting around them was spot on. Were there non-negotiables when you were casting for this, you know, very personal project and story of yours?
The main non-negotiable for me was the casting of Jax, played by Kai Griffin. Kai, the character of Jax, is intersex, and I wanted to cast someone who also was intersex. And I would not shoot the film without finding Kai, essentially. So that was the one non-negotiable. I found Kai on Instagram, and pretty incredible that that's where I found them. And I will say traditional casting directors were not helpful. And it's, you know, I would say it's not necessarily that there are no intersex actors, but maybe some people have not disclosed it in fear of they may be typecast. So I think it's kind of an interesting conversation about identity disclosure in the casting process. But, you know, with someone like Kai, they were cast as an intersex character, but I also would love to work with Kai where they're just a person who's, you know, whatever role I'm casting for, where their identity is not part of the narrative.
It's so fascinating because in this industry, you know, the past several years, we talk about diversifying the stories we tell. But in diversifying the stories we tell, we're also diversifying how we're going about the execution and how we go about finding the right people, which is so cool. Did you type in like hashtag intersex actors, or how did you even find?
I was pretty desperate. I posted like an Instagram post of like, hi, do you like, are you intersex? Have you, I was even like, if you haven't acted, like, we'll figure it out. And Kai put a hand raise emoji and I clicked their account. They actually were cast in their first acting. This is only their second acting role. The first was in Hollyoaks, which is a British soap opera. And they were the first non-binary character, I think, on a British television daytime show. So they were pretty groundbreaking for that role in the UK.
And I heard through the grapevine that you're really adamant about the environment in which you were fostering as well on set.
Yeah, I think as a director, just I really want to create an environment where people can bring their best work. And for me, that is somewhere where I feel respected, where I respect other people, where there's room for humor. I think people just bring their best selves when they are given a positive work environment. And also just with some of the subject matter and Maddie, you know, the crew was incredibly respectful of her, but it needed to be loving and calm. You know, it's like directors are often seen as, it's like very male and you're pointing fingers a lot and yelling, you know, and it's actually, in my opinion, like very maternal. It's like I'm sort of like taking care of all of these elements. That's not to say that I can get shit done when I need to, but
it's a balance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm no pushover, but I don't think that power comes from yelling or belittling people. People get power from respecting people and being respected.
Mm-hmm. You definitely get a sense of that, that everyone respected one another and enjoyed working with one another.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the ongoing themes of this story is, of course, identity and kind of finding that identity where you fit in. Do you fit in? I'm wondering, as an adult for you, where do you see yourself fitting in now? Is there a place in which that you feel like you fit in the most, and with whom?
You know, this industry is so weird and unnatural. And like, even being at a film festival is amazing. It is not natural to sit and talk about myself all day. I like to be around people who ground me, who have a sense of humor, who ultimately don't care. I mean, they're proud of my work and are excited for me, but I'm not defined by it. People who keep me real. I'm engaged to and a really amazing guy who, yeah, he supports me, but sometimes, you know, tough love is good too. Just real people. The one thing I do not enjoy is fakery or posturing, or I don't know, just only real ones.
And lastly, you know, you touch on the dating experience of Lindy in this story, the hookups. They're uncomfortable no matter what you're going through. As a teenage girl, there's a lot of nerves involved, a lot of insecurities. Mm-hmm. But if you can offer one piece of advice to young women, young girls out there who are experiencing MRKH syndrome and trying to navigate the dating scene, what kind of advice would you give them?
That is such a good question. I would say that having MRKH should not affect your ability to have pleasure, and that it is nothing to be ashamed of. However, you don't need to tell everybody. You can tell the people who you think deserve to know. You ultimately do not owe anybody any part of yourself. And you know, have fun. Like, sex is confusing for everybody. This is an extra wrench in it. I just think sexual education in general for teens is kind of a mess. But a big one is also, it's just consent. I'm down for people doing whatever they want as long as both, however many parties involved, agree.
Fitting In is fantastic, and I really hope you make time for it. The dramedy hits theaters on February 2nd. Thank you so much for dropping by for this homegirl discussion. You know, the door is always open.